Live from New York City, it's The Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. To all the stations that syndicate this program, to all the people listening all over the world, especially at a time when there's so many crises, we welcome you. And during this hour, I'll be dealing with those important issues. High up on our agenda today will be what to do when disaster strikes. But before then, we'll talk about a medical doctor giving us a unique insight into vaccine injury. The doctor is from Australia, a board-certified, respected physician for 40 years. Only now is he speaking out. Of course, the Australian government and the medical community is going after him. Well, we'll share what he has found in his 40 years of treating patients, including with vaccines. Also, why are millennials choosing a healthier lifestyle? They are. That's good news. And so we'll deal with that. And what about those who are not? And magnetic stimulation of the brain improves awareness of a person's cognitive abilities. This is from University of Helsinki in Finland. And then we're going to look at how vitamin E, when you don't have enough, can lead to increased colorectal cancer risk. And this is a major meta-analysis, meta meaning many. Whole lot more on health and healing. Then we're going to have a commentary on diseases of despair. I'm going to share my own commentary, as well as one from Chris Hedges from TruthDig. I was asked a question walking up the street last evening, and I just came out of a movie theater, and a person came over and said, I didn't want to, you know, interrupt your evening, but would you mind if I just walk for a while and talk with you? And I said, sure. So I was walking up from Lincoln Center. And the person was asking me some really interesting and thought-provoking questions. And I answered him. And then I said, I think the audience would benefit from that as well. So today, I'm going to give you a look at India. It's the largest democracy in the world. It has the most people of any nation in the world. China and India are almost side by side, about 1.3 billion each. But India is now at a place where it's suffering major environmental disaster, and China is going forward. I mentioned yesterday that it's building more eco cities, not a house, not a town. And their cities are like Los Angeles or New York City. And they have almost 300 of them they're building now, and they're well into it. So what could India learn? But he also asked me a question. He said, I've heard from your programs that you are a fan of Gandhi. I said, yes, I am. And what would have happened if Gandhi had prevailed? And I thought, all right, I'll deal with that. So for those of you who would like a lesson in history of the great conflict, the 300 years of British rule, and what brought that to an end, what the British did during their rule that was so devastating, not just India, but would have long-term consequences, their divide-and-conquer rule, and what would have happened had India stayed a single state, having a home for the Sikhs, the Muslims, and the Hindus, the Hindus people, and the Sikhs, what would be different today? So we'll deal with that. And also, not today, but tomorrow, I'm going to set aside time to show you why those who would like us to get into another Cold War with Russia, and they had the number one, number two dangerous country in the world, enemies of America being Russia and Iran. Neither is true, but I'll give you both a history lesson since I wrote a book on Russian history, and I will also give you an insight of why the neocons need us to demonize Russia, need us to demonize Iran. In point of fact, it's just the opposite. But that'll come tomorrow. So I'll share that historic and social insight. Also today, if time permits, I'm going to have Abby Martin, a woman I have a great deal of respect for, talk about Orwell's 1984. I believe that Orwell was conservative in his appreciation of what could happen if the state gained dominance compared to what we're actually living in. We are living in an Orwellian society today. Now, each week I try to bring you some additional insights into how far we've gone into becoming a police state. And I'll do more with that with Abby Martin if there's time. And so we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Right now, there is a major movement with all the major Facebook search engines and Google. They're trying to censor anyone who challenges the safety and efficacy of vaccines. Now, there's a little difference between challenging someone who has been damaged because of vaccines, the parents out there, and there are at least 4 million people who have been damaged or families of damaged members. There's 2 million just with autism spectrum disorder. That does not include the millions who've been damaged, but not to that level. They are suffering from learning disabilities, and there are at least 5 to 10 million children who have some form of learning disability or some form of allergic reaction or autoimmune system conditions. Try going up against them. Unlike others that, well, they don't really have to spend all their time on telling you why GMOs are bad, these people spend every day living with the consequences of a system that deceived them, the U.S. public health care system. It is a completely self-contained, profit-making center for big pharma. It's totally controlled. And I'll share my insights starting with a group of 20 articles that are all written and are now being vetted by my in-house lawyers and scholars for accuracy. This will be the most devastating expose of just facts, no emotion, just pure facts, that nothing you've been told about vaccines is honest, nothing. And I'm particularly going to go after those individuals who've led and profited from the exploitation of people's ignorance about vaccines. So when a doctor comes forward today and says, look, I was pro-vaccine until I saw what it did to my patients, and then I'm not giving it anymore, we should have a form for that. We don't. We have fascism only in medicine. There is no such thing as democracy in medicine. It does not exist at any level. At the state level, you have these little fascists who run the state medical boards. That's purely a fascist element to protect the status quo of orthodoxy from having any doctor go out of line. Now, I can show you all the doctors, including one that ended up in a chain gang, Dr. James Privatira, and I helped get him off that chain gang. My audience protested, and we protested to Governor Brown at the time, Jerry Brown's father. He was put in prison because he was using alternative medicine for cancer. He had every single patient show up in court to talk about how his therapies helped them. They ruled it inadmissible. The question was, are you using current scientific standards of acceptance? And the answer was, no, I don't use chemotherapy or radiation. I use nutrition. He was found guilty because of fraud. Now, it wasn't that he didn't heal patients. He did. And there was never proof he harmed a patient. There wasn't. But they kept it by the state medical board that were the McCarthyist of that time and still exist, that any doctor in America, any doctor who used any alternative therapy was considered an enemy of the state, the medical state, and hence was attacked. That still exists today. You say anything about healing people naturally, you are a target. So, with that, I will quote from The Natural Blaze, John Rappaport. By the way, John's a really good guy. He's always done exemplary work. He doesn't get the recognition he deserves. Here's what John found. In Australia, the noose is tightening around parents and children's necks. Australia is such a fascist country. Well, That's a separate story. I will be doing stories on how they, what the plantation owners and three-fourths the signers of the Declaration of Independence did to blacks in America and Irish and other whites who were also slaves, and I'll deal with that. Australia was starting to the Aborigines, but it didn't stop in the 1860s, 1865 proclamation. It was still going on into the 1960s, but I'll deal with Australia that really deserves to be dealt with as a country and is unlivable in the future. The only thing I suggest is the people that put you in harm's way are not going to get you out of it. In any case, quote, there is already a policy in place that denies certain government benefits to families who don't vaccinate their children. Now there's legislation that would deny unvaccinated children enrollment in daycare and kindergarten. But a grassroots rebellion is underway. Australian MD John Pais has stepped out of the shadows and reported his findings and research on vaccine damage. The government is investigating him. They may strip his license. The press is attacking him mercilessly. He isn't backing down. His stance is certainly heroic, but remember that every doctor takes an oath to do no harm to his patients. Without question, there are many other doctors who know the truth firsthand about what vaccines really do, but they stay silent. His stance is different. Some of these doctors don't vaccinate their own children, but they continue to inject toxic chemicals and viruses into their young patients. This is a crime and betrayal of the First Order. Here in full is a letter that the doctor recently wrote, and then here's the doctor's letter, and I'm posting this. I can't read the whole letter. I'll just read a little bit of it. Quote, I've been encountering cases of vaccine injury for over 40 years. In June, it was a happy, healthy, nearly five-year-old whose parents were required to put her on a catch-up schedule in order to get her into kindergarten. She won't be going to the school. She is in a wheelchair, brain damaged, her life ruined. Then came a friend's father who died after a flu vaccine. And last week, a four-year-old boy made autistic by a catch-up vaccine schedule. In 1988, the U.S. National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program was created. It has paid out over $3.5 billion to the vaccine injured. This program was set up to protect vaccine manufacturers from ruinous cost of litigation by vaccine-damaged people. It was deemed preferable to have unavoidable unsafe vaccines. By the way, that's the U.S. Supreme Court said all vaccines are unavoidably unsafe. So just remember that. Our own Supreme Court has ruled every vaccine unavoidably unsafe. Yet see that that never gets said in the media or by the pro-vaccine people who are the only ones who are given uncontested forms on television, like over in CNN with Dr. Gupta, where they bash Andrew Wakefield routinely. Now, it goes on, quote, vaccines contain health-damaging ingredients, not the least aluminum, a known neurotoxin implicated with mercury in brain damage as in autism and neurodevelopmental delay, ADHD, and learning difficulties. Aluminum is also a powerful promoter of autoimmune diseases. Vaccines can claim to be a mercury-free if their mercury count is below a still toxic threshold. By the way, as an aside, a lot of people have bought into the idea that vaccines are mercury-free today. They're not. They simply have less mercury. But we now know that mercury in parts per billion are neurotoxic. In fact, in my film, Vaccine Nation, I showed one single drop at parts per billion and it immediately destroyed a neuron. And you see it right under the microscope. So they're giving all these vaccines that still have lower levels of mercury, but this lower level is still extraordinarily toxic. And so he says, proof of vaccine safety requires rigorously conducted clinical studies comparing vaccinated versus truly unvaccinated children for health outcomes. And why should I read his comment there? Because they've been comparing vaccinated with a placebo. The placebo was another vaccine. It was not a saline solution. So they've never had this true study. Are there any such studies that confirm that vaccinated children are not worse off than those unvaccinated? No, there are none. Hence, child vaccines are unproven for safety. I'll repeat that. All childhood vaccines are unproven for safety and an inconvenient truth for a profession that prides itself on being scientific. One analysis indicated that national infant death rates were proportional to the number of vaccine doses and contradictory to the claim that vaccines save lives. As an aside, what he's saying there is, the more vaccines a child has, the more likely they are to die. And it goes on from there, and every single paragraph in this five-page letter is footnoted with scientific references. Now, instead of looking at his references from their own peer-reviewed literature showing that vaccines are neither safe nor effective, they're attacking him, just as they've done in the United States. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to be inviting a person on the air who was the chief and most credentialed and respected person who was a part of the small vaccine study group that led to an article in The Lancet, of which Dr. Andrew Wakefield was one of, but not the principal author. And these were all gastroenterologists, and they were not claiming that vaccines caused autism. The parents did. They didn't. They were merely looking at, was there anything in the intestines that was out of order for these children that were having diarrhea, as one said. And I interviewed the mother in England. Her kid was having diarrhea 12 hours a day, and yet they would not link it to the vaccine. And before the vaccines, normal. After this, and every one of those kids had a dysfunction within the mitochondria of their intestine. So that was the article. All these people in the study were all pro-vaccines, including Andrew Wakefield. But they were attacked, their article was retracted, and then they were demonized. And heading up the demonization was Anderson Cooper and CNN. Now, the chief scientist, the chief physician, one of the world's top gastroenterologists, lost his license, as did Andrew Wakefield, in what was nothing more than a shameful kangaroo court. And the person leading the attack against them was Rupert Murdoch. Why should that surprise anyone who knows anything about the Murdochs and his Times of London? But also the fact that he sits on the board, as does a member of his family, of the maker of the vaccine in question. In any case, that has now been appealed, and the highest court, what would be equivalent to our Supreme Court in Great Britain, found the doctor completely innocent and condemned the entire process as just a terrible injustice. Now, that doctor is now completely exonerated, except no one has apologized. No one. Not in England, not in the United States. Now, Andrew Wakefield did not have the money to file for that appeal, which is about $500,000. He was dead broke. So if his associate was exonerated and they were found guilty of the same identical infraction, then that means that Andrew Wakefield was also innocent. We also know, just so you're aware of it, that Dr. Thompson, William Thompson, at the very same time this was going on in England, at the very same time that the British and the world scientific community was condemning these people, Dr. Smith and the others, of scientific misconduct or fraud, Dr. William Thompson had a whole group at the CDC who were taking the MMR, the very same vaccine, MMR, measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, that was condemned in England, and they were finding that there was a 300 and 24% increase in autism spectrum disorder in young African-American children under the age of 36 months. They met repeatedly to try to change the figures. Now, that in and of itself is a crime. Now, you are exempted from lawsuits. You're indemnified if you're a government employee, unless, and by the way, the lawyers in this audience should pay attention because this is the basis for a class action lawsuit, unless you can show that the people committed a crime, then the government will not protect you unless you work for the CIA or the Defense Department or the White House or the State Department or the IRS or the Department of Energy. But if you work for the CDC, you're culpable. So then they brought in big black garbage bags, and with malice aforethought, fully intentional, they destroyed all the records, all the scientists involved. They massaged the figures. They had to make it seem as if the MMR vaccine did not increase in any way the rate of autism or was related. But the man who did all this, the man who headed this project, Dr. William Thompson, had that moment of guilt. He was afraid that what if, at some future date, there's a Freedom of Information Act request, or if I'm subpoenaed to testify before Congress and I've destroyed the records. So he kept a copy. He then had a mea culpa, and he got on the phone with a person he did not know but knew had had a child that had been adversely affected by vaccines, Dr. Brian Hooker, who we just filmed. In fact, we're filming again in the next week or two. And he confessed. Dozens of phone calls, and Hooker recorded it. And then Hooker took to a legislator in Florida who then asked for a hearing. There's been no hearing. No one at the FDA, the CDC, no one will allow this man to testify under oath, because if he does, they'll subpoena his documents. And they'll ask, did you and the CDC, did the head of the CDC make any effort to alter, change, subvert the truth of these studies? And he's going to have to say yes. That means the entire vaccine program at the CDC will be shown to be a fraud. And then the question is, what is the motive? What are the financial connections? Why would you lie? Mind you, these are the same degenerates at the CDC, which is a degenerate agency that should not exist, that allowed African Americans to be treated like lab rats and knowingly spread syphilis congenitally for 40 years. Do you have any idea how many millions of people could end up with syphilis today not even knowing because it's congenital? Because they wanted to use these people as if they were African American, or as if they were just test subjects? They could have cured them, cured no one. So we're supposed to believe anything the CDC says today? It's a major, major scandal. So sooner or later, the truth will come out. And sooner or later, all the people involved in pro-vaccines or attacking people who challenge vaccines will be held accountable. And sooner or later, there will be massive class action lawsuits. And sooner or later, every one of these people will no longer be identified or able to hide behind some government shield. So for the good doctor in Australia, thank you for having the courage to stand up against a completely corrupt government and one that is racist to the eyeballs. And you talk about taking down some statues. Show me the... By the way, since when did someone priding themselves on being a Rhodes Scholar... Let me see, Rhodes Scholar. Who was Rhodes? Was Rhodes a racist? Yeah. Did Cecil Rhodes cause massive destruction of life into the millions? Yeah. And who was the primary promoter of the Rhodes Scholarship in the United States? Was it a man named Fulbright from a state called Arkansas? And was his protege Bill Clinton? So why doesn't Bill Clinton come forward, or Hillary Clinton, and denounce Rhodes, tear down their statues, and get rid of the Fulbright Scholarship, all based upon racist fortunes? I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Just a final reminder that tonight, from 7 to 10, we're going to have a wonderful time dancing, socializing, meeting new friends. It's a thank you to all of the listeners in this audience, at least those who live in the tri-state area, who would like to come to one of the dance parties. I think this is our 51st dance party. Over the last 40 years, I have dance party. This is free. It's just a way of for all the people who've kept our sister station alive in New York in spite of how you've been dealt with. This is my way of saying thank you for continuing your support, and let's put all that in the rearview mirror. Going forward, let's celebrate happiness, joy, health, and dancing tonight. Disco music. I've spent the last 2 days putting it all together, and we have a person in our audience who's going to be Patrick spinning the music for you tonight. So come to dance. And if you want to join us, call 646-926-5422. 646-926-5422. And I also want to thank Kelsey, our onboard operator, because she put together some great music, and you'll see how good it sounds and how good it flows. Before we go to one of the issues of the day, I just wanted to bring you up to date on some of the things that are of concern about the environment. First off, and these are just, I'm going to go into each one just for a moment. Here's what happens when we don't plan ahead. When we think that the environmental disasters out there will never happen to us. And I mentioned yesterday that someone I know very well bought a place in Montana. That place is now gone. All those beautiful places are now on fire. The whole state's on fire. And yet we don't have a natural disaster program for the state because it's never been on fire before like this. You've had fires, but not over 2,000 fires right now. The whole West, Idaho is on fire. Oregon is on fire. Washington is on fire. British Columbia is on fire. Parts of Canada on fire. Even downtown Los Angeles, not downtown, but right the mountain range, is on fire. I posted dozen photographs to show you how severe this is. We've never seen this before. Then again, we never saw 45 to 50 inches of rain come down within 24 to 48 hours with no place for that rain to go, especially in South Texas where you have just clay. So it's a cap, so nothing can go into it. The flooding going to happen in Florida over the next couple of days will be bad. They're expecting anywhere from 20 inches to 40 inches. It depends upon how slow or fast the hurricane is. But the hurricane right now is larger than the entire state of Florida. If you go from Miami Beach to Tallahassee, which is in the northwest section of the state, is 400 miles. That does not include the Keys or Homestead. Then you're at about almost 450 miles. The hurricane's bigger than that. So when the hurricane hits, the entire state is going to be inundated. There is no plan. There's no plan A. Just get out and go. And so shouldn't we at some point, and that's going to go right up into Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, and then it'll sputter out somewhere around Maryland, hopefully. But you're going to have torrential rain and torrential flooding. And you'll see people saying, oh, you know, everything is ruined. Well, why didn't you carry the damn furniture up to the second floor? Why didn't you get your belongings and put them in a trailer? Just rent a trailer, you know, for $100, rent a trailer, stack it all on a trailer and get it out of harm's way. Why didn't you take, did you check your flood insurance? There's a difference between water damage and flood insurance, flood damage. If something happens to your house caused by the water on the roof and the roof collapsing and going in the house, you're covered. If that same water that's on your house rolls off your roof, goes into your lawn, floods the lawn, which then backs into the house, you're not covered. You got to know that the rules of this. And the government's flood program is bankrupt. It's $25 billion in the hole. And this at the same time that those so-called concerned legislators are trying to undermine your ability to be covered with insurance. Here are some things you should do if you haven't. First, go out and get yourself a generator. Get yourself a diesel generator, ideally a solar generator, but it's too late for that. and get a generator and hook it up to your water well. You need your water. If you have a well, hook it up, protect it, put it up on blocks, and put a little igloo over it, you know, like a metal igloo. Then make sure that you have your bathtub filled up and to flush your toilet, because once the electric goes out, the first thing that's going to happen is all the electric in Florida when that storm comes is going to go out, or at least 90% of it. So if you have a generator, then it immediately kicks on, so at least your refrigeration stays in place. Make sure that you get 5-gallon buckets. These are new buckets. And then fill them up now, or let's say on Saturday, fill them up, and then put about 20 drops of colloidal silver in each one and cover them, so at least you have drinkable water. Then make sure that you have food that will not perish. So plan on 10 days of being without electricity. That's average when you have a storm half the size. The last time I got hit, because my ranch, my home's in Florida, but I started getting all my preparation done a week ago, anticipating this is going to happen. Same thing. The generator's back up. Your water pump back up. Your backup electricity. And have at least 100 to 200 gallons of backup, either gasoline or diesel to run your generators. You don't have to run a generator 24/7. You want to have a separate generator for all your frozen stuff and refrigeration. And as long as you don't open and close the door all the time, that'll stay. So you only have to run that generator probably every 2 to 3 hours, because you're going to use about 20 gallons of gas in a day. Make sure that your vehicles are over full. Take it to the end. When it clicks, gently push a little more. You get another 2 gallons in there, because a lot of people now leaving Florida are going to run out of gasoline before they get out of Florida, or certainly out of Georgia. There's not a drop of gasoline to be had on the East Coast, or water or food. It's all gone. So the very thing I've been talking about, the very thing I've been telling people, oh, won't happen here, or they get completely indifferent. Their hubris just, well, it's not going to happen to me. Well, you know, it's like, why don't I have a farm upstate right now when I had one 15 years? Because I don't want my friends and family and people coming up for a weekend to end up with Lyme's disease. Ask anybody who lives upstate how often you've been bitten by ticks, how many of you have Lyme disease. How about epidemic proportions? So nothing in nature is as important as keeping healthy and safe. I can enjoy nature at a distance. I don't need to immerse myself. But when you live on a farm, as I have my entire adult life and do now, and you live close with nature, you better understand you will always lose when it comes to trying to fight nature or weather it out. You better be smart. Have yourself a rain suit. That means a complete rubberized suit. They're not expensive. For $200, you can get one. That means the boots come clear up to the thighs, so you're waterproof. So if you have to wade in water, you're not wading in toxic water. I can assure you there are going to be hundreds of thousands of infections and people who are out there in the water nobly, and I support them and congratulate them for helping people, but they didn't realize the water is filled with parasites, water is filled with toxins, and now there's going to get in any scratch, any cut, any way of getting in the body. It even get through your urethra and your anus. So you're in that water, you're going to be infected. So protect yourself. Have backup. There's a special flashlight that is enormously powerful. It's like the power of 10 flashlights. Get like 3 or 4 and get extra batteries. Plan on being out of issues. Make sure that you have your storm shutters up. Do it now. Don't wait till the last moment. The first people that leave a state or buy the supplies are the panic people. Then come a lull. Then comes the second stage, where you realize, gee whiz, am I going to stay here? What am I facing? You're going to face, if we get 20 inches of Florida rain, you don't have to worry about the surge coming in to cause the problem. You're going to have that. If you're near the beach, you're going to be flooded. All those buildings in South Beach are all going to be flooded, every single one. So all those homes, every single one I'm aware of, has the generators in the basement. Well, they don't have basements in Florida. They don't allow them. But basements at the bottom level. Well, you get 5 feet of water, your generator is worthless. It's flooded. So get your generator up. Your generator should be at least 10 feet up, ideally, and protected. That way the generator will not flood, so when everyone else has no electricity, you will have it. Make sure your water is up off the floor, protected. Make sure your food is up and protected. Right now you have at least 4 days. Listen to me. Listen to what I'm saying. You got 4 days to move your furniture, move your clothing. If you have a second floor, good. If you don't, get everything out because it's all going to be destroyed. There'll be nothing left. And you'll just be one of those people saying, well, here's everything at the curb, but we lost everything. And what's your deductible on your insurance? Did they tell you that? You got a deductible, and it's high. That means you might have a $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 deductible before your insurance, if you have it, kicks in. And if the insurance covers the flood damage but does not cover the hurricane damage, doesn't cover the flood damage. And boy, will they try to disallow it, that water going outside on the ground, then back into your house. If that's the water that hurts your house, if you walk in your house and you still got a roof and you still got windows, but you got 3 feet of water, you won't be covered. Watch, these are the scumbags of the earth, these insurance people. They're going to screw you. So you're going to have no help. No one's going to be there to help you. You're going to have to help yourself. So get out of the state if you can. But put your stuff on trailers. I never will forget this. And in the studio right now is Richard Gale, who's going to talk with us in the next segment. Richard, remember when I had to go out to California to film Knocking on the Devil's Door?
Yeah. Yes.
And our cinematographer, because we have about 30 cinematographers around the world, so that wherever we need someone, like we need someone in Los Angeles or San Francisco, we have people that we worked with a long time who are really good. And we had to go to the north part of the state and out of Los Angeles. And as we're driving, I'm looking at all these fires. So I said, anyone in this whole area should be moving. I said, well, I live in this area. I said, well, then we're going to go right now. We're going to move you. No, I'm not in the fire way. You can't tell if you're going to be in fire way. The wind can change. A spark can fly. You got 80-mile-an-hour winds. A spark can fly for a long distance. It's okay. We can be a couple hours late. Let's go rent a trailer, go to your house, and we'll unload everything. Everything that's of value, you're going to save. No, no, no. And he argued and argued. And he said no. And then he got angry. You know, I said no. And I said, okay. I said, I just want to help you. Coming back, we dropped him off in the evening. His house burnt down. Lost everything. What was he more angry at? The fire that destroyed his house, or his knowing there was a chance he could have saved it? At what point in life are we capable of making the necessary emergency changes to get out of harm's way? Or would we rather face Katrina? And I wrote a whole, as you know, I wrote an article on this called Watching Katrina. We did nothing and watched Katrina for 5 days until we were watching the people on the roof saying help. And I'm saying you could have walked out of town. Not everyone, but about 70,000 people could have gotten out of harm's way or gotten their clothing out. We just never seemed to do anything that we should do based on reason and common sense. So I'm saying right now, all of Florida is going to get just smashed and flooded beyond anything this state has ever had in its history. If it hits at a Category 4, because we only have generally a Category 1 or 2, Category 4, when you have overdevelopment, and the entire East Coast is overdeveloped. Not one of those people that overdeveloped, not one of the city commissioners, not one of the mayors, not one of the building architects, not one of the board planning, none of them are going to say, I'm sorry that we overdeveloped this. I'm sorry we destroyed the wetlands. I'm sorry we destroyed the mangrove forest. I'm sorry we didn't put you back 2 miles off the ocean, let you walk to the ocean. If you really want to go to the ocean, fine, walk there. So if there's a flood, you're up. No one's going to apologize for being so wrong because they all profited off of it. The real estate brokers who are going to tell you, oh, that's safe here. And I'm saying it's not. Now look at Houston. Houston's the fourth largest city in the United States by population and one of the top five in wealth. Did you notice any billionaires and multimillionaires and heads of corporations in the boats being rescued or helping rescue other people in the boats? I'm just curious.
No, No, it didn't. No.
No.
But they had their helicopters to get out.
Who did you see being rescued?
It was it was the average citizen who was
working people.
Working people and right.
And what didn't they have?
I mean, what didn't they have? Well, they got
hurt.
Yeah.
Because there was no mandatory evacuations and evacuating in time for them to get their possessions out, to leave their home.
And a lack of warning
And lack of warning.
And lack of warning or proper warning.
During the entire thing, there was no mandatory evacuation. But also, Houston was, wealthy as it is, didn't think that maybe we should build an above-ground civic emergency center where we could have rooms for families and singles, hospital care, cafeterias that would feed 10,000 people or more. They had the money. The wealth is there.
Yeah.
All right? Per population, you have more millionaires and billionaires in Houston than you do in Manhattan. We have Wall Street in Manhattan, but individuals. It's a hugely successful and rich city. But nobody wanted to say no to the development, so it was overdeveloped. And no precautions were put in place, none. So they don't have drinking water.
Well, we see that in New York City right now with the construction and nothing being done for a wall, although the planning for a wall goes back to Hurricane Donna. I mean, it was 1960, I believe, Hurricane Donna. And the Army Corps of Engineers did the whole plan for New York City. Showing at different points between I forgot how many feet wall, but it's between 15 and 12 feet, depending on different points. But it was all mapped out, and nothing has been done. And you know, look at the.
No, we wasted $5 billion on a Second Avenue subway we didn't need. The politics, the wealth. Nobody wants to put a limitation or a restriction on those who are bringing lots of money to political campaigns and the industry they control, which is the developers and the real estate people. So there's another storm right behind this one, and it's going to be a 7-day storm, meaning it's going to be 7 days between Irma and Jose. And Jose could end up being a Category 4 or 5 storm, also going straight up the East Coast. Could hit. They don't know yet, but could hit New York or New Jersey. And the last time New York got hit
was Sandy.
Category 1.
Yeah.
Category 1. Category 1.
Went Category 2 to 1, right?
Yeah. So imagine if we could hit with Category 3 or 4, where I'm prepared. So a couple other things to be prepared. Get a generator. Get it up in the air. You can build a platform. The worst case scenario, you just go get cinder blocks, and you just get like 100 cinder blocks, and you make yourself a, 8-foot high with cinder block steps up, and you bolt in your generator so it's not going to get flooded, and then you put it there. So then you got yourself power for electricity. Turn off the air conditioner; it drains too much. Just keep it low power. You're not going to have internet down there. You probably won't have telephone.
Right.
So we're going to see a major blackout. The only good thing about this storm is that it's fast moving, 15 miles an hour at this point. Whereas the one that just hit Harvey was 2 miles an hour, and it stayed right half over the Gulf, creating more water. This one's going to go fast. So the damage is going to be like a big sucker punch. get yourself things that you can eat without cooking. Load up on lots of fruits. Get yourself powders. Get yourself canned things. Canned beans are fine. Bottles of apple juice and beet juice, which is terrific. Store it. What you don't use is there for the future. So, now, this is another thing. This is from Wired. Harvey wrecks up to 1 million cars in car-dependent Houston. Once again, Houston has one of the worst public transportation systems in the United States. But everybody's got a car. Well, now 1 million people don't have cars. So if you've got 1 million cars off the roads, how are people supposed to get from point A to point B? And then we also know that the lack of adequate car payments is just devastating a lot of people. So now how are you going to get a car, rent a car, when you're already late by 9 months on your previously owned car on payments? You're not going to get a car loaned to you or rented to you. So then you're going to have to go into the market and buy something. But if you don't have money because you were too poor to have the money to begin with, and 50% of all the people living in the Houston area, 50%, same as New York City, by the way, live at or below the poverty level. So you don't even have $500 in savings. So how are you going to buy a car if you don't have the cash? How are you going to rent a car if you're already late in 6 months, which you're going to know instantly? Why not put a public transportation system that you can go any place in Houston on free public transportation? Why don't we bring the buses from all over around the United States that are not used to Houston so that they can at least set up a transportation grid to take people to the evacuation centers and places where they're out of harm's way and give them free access on those buses? We have at least 5,000 buses that's a conservative estimate, that could be brought down there. We also should have had giant water filtration systems in place. We did not have them in New York. If you remember, we took thousands upon thousands of bottles of water and gave it free down when Sandy hit because people just, mind you, wonder how many of those people living down there without electricity, right? The smart, you know, little genius from Harvard and Yale, you know, the ones that go each day up to Wall Street and make their gazillions out of greed. But when it came to a simple thing like having water, they didn't have a bottle of water to drink. They couldn't have flush a toilet. So sometimes we are overly achieved and successful in one area of our life and completely underdeveloped in another. So just remember, we could be doing something to help them with transportation. So, and then I'm looking now this morning, war and warning threatens Jordan's water supply. And this is in Climate News. Yes. So now Jordan, which is not a rich country, but it's now running out of water from the Jordan River. So what are they going to do when they run out of water? And then we have 1 million pounds of 7 deadly air pollutants released by Texas refineries during Harvey floods. And this is from the Center for Biological Diversity. So now we have 1 million pounds of toxins that no one knows what they are in the water, in the air. It's going to be in the soil, and you can't get it out of the soil. No way. And it can't go anywhere because the cap, once the rain dries up, which will take months, all the toxins that were in the soil, which were in the air, are now in the soil because the clay cap won't let them dissipate. You know, the basic, the solution for pollution is dilution. We have no way to dilute this. So here's a heads up for all of you living in this area of Texas. Move. In your lifetime, that soil will never be made healthy. Just like there's so much depleted uranium in Iraq and Afghanistan and Kosovo, that it will never be made clean and healthy. Now, the government will lie to you. That's what it does all the time, every day, every department. Oh, it's acceptable now. Acceptable to who? Someone with a depressed immune system? Someone who has had a liver transplant and has to watch what goes in their body? Someone with diabetes? Who exactly can tolerate a lot of toxins in their body? And so just remember, you're going to be lied to, but the toxins are there and it's not going to go away. Now we got faced with invasive species because of all this hot weather. And you said you used to live in the San Francisco area and they hit 106 degrees causing all these fires. No one was expecting this.
Yeah. This is all climate change. In fact, something I was just writing was there is the pine beetle, southern pine beetle, which originated in Central America. It has now devastated 72% of all pine trees in the southern states. It's now reached New Jersey. It's appearing now in Long Island. It's estimated that in another 10 years or so, 78% all going up to southern Maine of all pine trees will be devastated. This is because of one of these, this a beetle, you know. And we see it even because I live up in the Hudson Valley, up in the Berkshires, and we have Japanese knotweed and all these other kind of invasive species that are coming in.
Here's what this says. This is from Alternet, Bianca Cruz. Across the United States, invasive species are responsible for, quote, the decline of 42% of the threatened and endangered species. This is costing us $120 billion mm-hmm. a year. Invasive species can be insects, plants, fish, and wildlife that originate in one part of the world but end up in a different habitat as a result of globalization and where their presence disrupts the natural order of things. So right now, this year, 100 million trees have died in California, and that beetle is responsible for most of that. So that said, we're not paying attention to climate change. We've got to get beyond the demagogues, the Bill O'Reillys, and who's somewhere lost in an echo chamber with his audience, talking about the death of someone else, and the Rush Limbaughs. Mm-hmm. We've got to get to the reality that global warming is real. Mm-hmm. We're all being impacted by it. Right now, we had the worst flood in American history, the most rain in American history, the worst wildfires in American mm-hmm. history, in Montana, in these other states. These are not small events that are being contained.
Right.
And now we got two hurricanes back-to-back, making the third one, Jose, we could end up having the three most deadly hurricanes in American history hit us all at once mm-hmm. with no time to recover. So now where you live and what you do makes a difference. By the way, at my retreat, I've decided I'm going to spend one whole day, all day, no other workshops, just on where to live, where to go, how to get there, what you need, so that you're not one of these people who say, I didn't know. I was living in a $3 million apartment down across from Wall Street in this whole city down there with almost 500,000 other people, and we're all rich and famous and successful. And we don't have any water, power, or food. Mm-hmm. How's that happen? Well, A, it's karma. And B, maybe you ought to pay attention to what your education and your success mm-hmm. didn't give you.
Right.
Common sense, reason, and empathy for the other people suffering in the world. So it's a wake-up call on all levels. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, I'm gonna set that day aside just so people, they can reject the information. But when you reject something can help you, you do so at your own risk. Now, here's what I want you to focus on for a moment for our audience. I was having a conversation with a person who was from India, and we were having a conversation on Gandhi, and he asked my opinion of Gandhi, and I said, Gandhi was a unique human being. There was only one Gandhi. There are other people who are unique in their own way, but no one ever did what Gandhi did. But he also was an eternal optimist. He believed that India should not have been separated in 1947. It should have stayed together. The reason it was separated was because the First and Second World War destroyed the economic base of Great Britain. They couldn't afford their empire anymore. And also they were being drained and the politics was changing. But Churchill was a rabid racist. And part of the reason you had between 3 to 4 million Bengalis who died of starvation was not because of a pure, unmitigated lack of food. There was adequate food. It was what Churchill did with it and how he chose not to help them. But Churchill aligned himself with the head of the Muslim League that few Americans have ever heard of. And that man was an extraordinary Machiavellian character. I think he was a despicable human being, but that's my own personal view. But the two people the world knew about was Gandhi, never elected political office. He was there as a spiritual advisor to the massive amount, 4-to-1 Hindus to Muslims, but also Nehru. Nehru was educated mm-hmm. at Oxford, along with the head of the Muslim League. He also wanted, he was a nationalist. He wanted to see the country kept together, but it wasn't. It was separated. Here's my question to you.
Yeah.
Having lived in that part of the world, having been a scholar on that, what would the world be like today if Gandhi had succeeded and India had not been broken up into Pakistan in one corner? And what would we see today, do you think? It's a guess.
Yeah. one thing is to think, look at since the time of the partition at how much money, how much expense, how much human resources has gone into military defensive buildup between the two nations. This is a huge amount of money. India today has the third largest standing in the world And it has the second largest paramilitary force of over 2 million people, just in their paramilitary. And so much of Pakistan's resources have gone. Think if that were combined into all that expenditure were combined into a separate program that would be used for human development, social development, helping to raise the poverty level in the rural, which is mostly in the rural areas of India. India still has 22% poverty rate, so it's still extremely high. But if there were the 5 million people that were displaced just from partition. Estimates as high as 2 million of people killed, with Muslims trying to leave India to go to newly formed Pakistan, and Hindus and Sikhs trying to leave the region of Pakistan to flee to India. The tinderbox of India-Pakistan relations today is Kashmir, and that is largely today a climate change issue because of the two sides arguing over water rights from the Himalayan glaciers. Pakistan relies, based on British divide and rule policies, which the British were expert at. You use a divide and rule policy in order to maintain some degree of influence by creating strife between different parties within a country. And in this case, it was a very religious base between Muslims and Hindus. But there is the struggle over the water rights of the glacier runoff, and Pakistan depends on that for the Indus Valley, which is the seat and the breadbasket for Pakistani's agriculture. Today, you have the Chinese even encroaching in on Kashmir and the India border. That would not be taking place. A unified India would be beneficial for women's rights. Indian women have far more greater rights than the women in Pakistan. Education would be much better for women. And I was kind of estimating that we probably might not even have ever seen the Soviet invasion into Afghanistan or the American invasion of Afghanistan. And it's very possible we may never have even seen a Taliban emerge in Afghanistan, because India, as the largest democracy in the world, would be right up against Afghanistan's borders. And if you go back into history, during 18th and 19th century, there was a sizable Hindu population in Afghanistan at one time. It was all kind of part of that single continent. We might even have different relationships with Iran today. Back in the 1950s, India and Iran were in the midst of planning a natural gas pipeline between Iran and India, and it was only Pakistan which was sitting on the fence and unable to make its mind. That never occurred. But when there's these large infrastructural international projects such as a pipeline, these are geopolitical activities that unite nations in many ways. So I'm certain that the international demonization of Iran that we witness today, particularly with the U.S. and our allies, that probably would not even exist.
Well, also the idea that the Hindus and the Muslims could not coexist is not true. For centuries, they did coexist. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have a firebrand that is causing this kind of strife and saying one group is evil and therefore you must slaughter them or kill them, then you can spark that genocide. But otherwise, I believe that if Gandhi had prevailed and he had no vote, mm-hmm. but Nehru did, and only 20 to 25% of all the people in India were Muslims. Mm-hmm. So they were going to give the head of the Muslim League the top position in the new government, but they also knew in short order that with a democracy that big, they'd be voted out of power, and therefore they'd be relegated to second-rate citizens. And they even considered themselves like the slaves in America compared to the white slave masters. And the Muslims didn't want that. And that was one of the defining elements of why Pakistan was finally created. But it was Winston Churchill, in secret, against Gandhi and against Nehru, that created the border of Pakistan. That was not done in the open. It wasn't done by Mountbatten, who was the last viceroy of India. Thank you for sharing those thoughts. I'm Gary Noll. Just a few comments that we don't think about and don't talk about. Not that it's relevant today, but we have a conflict in the world today. Pakistan and India are now both nuclear, and they've had four wars, and they're draining resources, and those resources should go to helping their people and helping to adjust to sustainable living and cleaning up their rivers and lessening poverty instead of positioning one another, and especially with a rabid nationalist running India right now. Good friend of America, but he is not a unifier. I'm Gary Noll. Have a nice day.